Chuck and Julie, bringing you the truth straight up.
I'm Julie Hagan. I'm working at
an Emmy-winning former investigative reporter, a highly successful trial attorney, and publisher of a major Denver area newspaper. They've been partners as talk show hosts and in marriage as parents for over 10 years, providing thought-provoking information, opinion, and entertainment live, local, and interactive. Everyone's voice is always welcome on the Chuck and Julie Show.
And happy party Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show with Julie Hayden and Chuck Bonneville. Chuck, just coming in now.
Sliding in after
the hair and makeup.
Represented by the hat.
That's right. The show is brought to you by Mountain West Wellness, Advanced Acupuncture, and Chinese Medicine. We've got Charles Marino, a great new book out. We're going to get to him in a second. But first, want to just mention briefly some breaking news. Chuck, even you don't know this.
Even I don't know this. How do I not know this?
It's minutes old. The judge in the New York case against Donald Trump has just alerted both attorneys that there was a Facebook post put up on the court's Facebook page the day before the verdict from somebody who said, my cousin is a juror and he tells me that they're going to convict Trump and hooray for everything, which would seem to be against the rules.
A violation.
No, they're holding a hearing on it.
I bet they are. So judicious.
Well, we'll get to that. But first, I want to talk with Charles Marino. He has a great new book out. He's a national security expert, terrorists on the border and in our country. Hey, Charles, thank you for your time. Welcome to the Chuck and Julie Show.
Yeah, thank you, Charles.
Hi, Julie. Thank you. Good to be with you.
Yeah. So, you know, you read constantly anymore. We've gotten so used to seeing the pictures of all of the people flooding the border, and everybody thinks it's bad. But I think one of the things that you're pointing out is, you know, it's not just bad in terms of crime, in terms of the economy, in terms of everything, but actual terrorists are getting in.
Why aren't they doing anything?
Well, first talk to us about the problem, and then, because we know it.
Why are they sitting on their heels?
Because terrorists can vote too, Chuck.
Huh?
Terrorists can vote too.
Well, that's how they vote, by doing terrorism.
No, so anyway, Charles, so what, how bad is it?
Oh, it's horrible. I mean, the administration knows that this is no way to protect the homeland. Secretary Ali Mayorkas at the Department of Homeland Security, he knows better. This is all by design, all on purpose, towards ultimately getting additional voters into the country. But what it does to our national security is all these policies coming out of the Biden administration undercuts our entire homeland security apparatus. It undercuts Customs and Border Protection, ICE, the FBI, DEA, and the list goes on and on. So it really does a disservice to this country because it's putting us in a much more dangerous situation. And this is what's keeping everybody up at night, including the FBI director and intelligence officials. We have no idea who's being allowed to enter the country. However, we do have example after example of criminal aliens and terrorists being let in and already infiltrating the country.
Right. Well, we saw it just now.
Well, I don't think our Mr. Ray has any sleepless nights. If he did, he'd do something about it. But moreover, you have to wonder. I mean, it's been charged, and in large part true, the FBI breaks terrorist cells. Really, just setups by mentally retarded or low IQ kids, and who they get to supply bombs to and everything else. And then they say, we saved you. We saved you again. Do they know actually how to investigate real terrorists?
Well, this is the real deal here. Yeah, look, this, I get your point, but this is the real deal here. We're seeing encounters of over 180 different countries, Chuck, and many of these countries are designated as special interest locations. That is, confirmed operations, terrorist operations are still up and running with a deep hatred of the U.S. and they want to strike. And what's happening right now with the open borders is the perfect invitation from this administration to conduct and do just that. That's why many people are correctly saying it's not a matter of if, but when something happens here. We know the Mexican cartel will work with anybody. They're working with China right now regarding the production of fentanyl to kill hundreds of thousands of Americans a year. Nothing's been done about it. We're just overwhelmed because of the policies of the administration. And we know that they'll work with terrorist organizations, both state and non-state actors like Iran and non-state actors like Hamas, Hezbollah, the Houthis, ISIS, ISIS-K. Again, the threats are many and diverse against the country right now. And that's why our threat level is 10 times higher than it was pre-9/11.
But what do you think there's some kind of tepid agreement, tacit agreement, that they won't do any terrorist attacks until Biden leaves office, keep that border open, bringing in their compadres and just building up their cells? Why attack now? Why not get as many people as you can into the United States?
Well, I mean, you're right. What? There's nothing stopping from bringing all the resources necessary unobstructed into the country right now. So I think your point is well taken, and that is, why stop infiltrating the country if you're still able to and carry out a larger scale attack in the end? You know, it's not a good place for us to be in right now as a country. And the problem is, none of this will be fixed by this administration. This executive order that he issued the other day is an insult to the American people. It continues to invite illegal immigration, as we're seeing play out on TV, does nothing to address the 10 to 15 million illegals already in the country, and it continues to line the pockets of the cartels. Well, so nothing has changed.
No, and you talk about terrorism, and I think there's sort of two kinds of terrorism. There's the sort of like the homeland security, national security terrorism, and I think then there's the terrorism that people are experienced just living in, say, New York City, where we saw an illegal immigrant who was staying at a taxpayer-funded hotel, right, shot at two police officers, and they think this guy was part of essentially a theft gang, right? Or rings, like you said, one of the cartels. So you've got that kind of thing going on.
Hardworking.
Yeah, but you know, just the terrorism of people who are crimes are being committed. You know,
right.
We've got a friend. It's something as simple as, you know, the downtown Denver anymore kind of looks like Tijuana. I had a friend say to me the other day, you know, you can't stop at the
Tijuana looks a lot better.
Yeah, you stop at the stoplight and they're skirting dirty water, and then they're demanding you give them money so they can clean your windshields, right? And he goes a whole different way to work now. And I mean, that's not on one level, okay, that's not rising clearly to the level of a mass terror attack, but it is a kind of thing that just, it's affecting people. And as you said, and the cartels know this, they know that they can set up these crime rings, which then send money back to the cartels, and nothing happens to these people, and more just keep coming in.
Well, of course, because look, they're protected by sanctuary cities. You see this each and every day in Denver. That's why I've said from the start, you know, the next administration immediately needs to cut off federal grants going to sanctuary cities. That's it. If you don't want to join the rest of the country in enforcing law and order, and you want to go your own way, and you want to protect criminals that shouldn't be in the country in the first place and terrorists, then you're not going to get any federal money, and you can handle the problem on your own. Yeah. But, you know, the problem is sanctuary cities continue to be a major pull factor for the criminal element to come, set up base. They've got nothing but time because the Biden administration has prevented agencies like ICE from conducting large-scale interior operations to root them out. And that's why sanctuary cities are seeing exploding rates of crimes being committed by those in the country illegally. And anybody that says that's not happening, anybody says that that's a false connection, is absolutely lying.
Exactly.
Well, but the key is that they don't mind lying. Well, I mean, it's true for Mayorkas.
No.
It's true of Merrick Garland. It's true. It's certainly true of the president. They don't mind lying. I mean,
the economy is great.
But that's why they don't go down the border. That's why they avoid the border like the plague. Because remember, if you don't go down and you don't go see it happening, you can deny it. Right. So it puts them in a better position. It's the old plausible deniability. It puts them in a better position to tell the lie.
What about in terms of terrorists? Years ago, I mean, we had Chuck and I have had long done radio shows, and I was a former investigative TV reporter, and we did a lot of work with folks involved in Homeland Security and the immigration, and I back when it was Customs even. And one of the things they talked about is they said when people would come and with and this was back when there was something of a border, right? And he would tell us that a big problem is it's not like a lot of these people are coming from countries, the terrorist countries, where they have like, a DMV that you could kind of check people's fingerprints. They just come in and they say, oh, I'm Julie Smith, and that there's no way to check, right? And so he said back then he was saying we're letting people in who, for all we know, could be complete terrorists. And unless they just said, oh, I'm a terrorist, we wouldn't know. I
Here's my
mean,
social
yeah,
media account.
here's my social media
Yeah.
account,
And you're right, Julie. Yeah, you're right. It doesn't matter whether we're talking about those that are encountered and let into the country or the over 2 million of what called gotaways, where they're never encountered by CBP, but they elude CBP altogether. Whether you're talking about either of those, the vetting is only as good as the systems you're vetting against, to your point. And that is many of these third world countries do not have systems in place like we do. Look, perfect example. We saw this happen with the botched withdrawal from Afghanistan, where the administration brought in 5,000 Afghan refugees, insisted to the American people that they were thoroughly vetted, brought them into the country, and a week later, the FBI was looking for 2,500 of them, right? So, these are the facts. Again, these are the facts. And either they don't have the systems in place to share the information with us, or we're talking about an adversary like China who doesn't share the information with us on purpose so they can send a 2,000% increase here to the United States of Chinese nationals to be let in.
Well, let me ask you about China, and I'm glad you brought that up because I noticed it too. And again, maybe I'm incorrect in this, but my assumption is that it's probably not all that easy to sneak in and out of China if they don't want you sneaking in and out. So how
Right.
can, since we've seen this unusual surge. I mean, I was watching one report where they're like, these are all people from China, right? And coming in
That's
through.
right.
And how, and it seems to me that they must be coming here with the okay, at the very least, of the Chinese government. Or are they sleepers, do you suppose, that will be activated at some, I mean, what's going on with all of that?
Well, they got a lot of Chinese
Well,
farmland, so they need some workers to it, but.
Let's let's look at the demographics of those Chinese nationals that are primarily coming to the United States and being let in. They're males. Single males, 18 to 45 years of age. You're exactly right that large groups of people like that just don't up and leave China all at once. And China will do what they always do and refuse to take them back. And
Right.
can they be sleepers? You're absolutely right. Because look, should we have a conflict with China over, say, oh, I don't know, Taiwan? What better way than to infiltrate the United States and knock our lights out from the inside first?
Right. Well, and in
And
Denver, I was going to say, in Denver,
I
they
was
have
going to say,
insane
we're suffering
policies.
from a failure of imagination.
Yeah. Well, and in Denver, they have insane policies. They want to loosen the requirements for police officers and such, so that some of these illegal immigrants, who we have no idea who they are or what their background is, can start getting jobs in like law enforcement. I mean, it seems to me that there's got to be a nefarious plan on the part of, I mean, on the part of maybe the terrorist organizations, maybe other countries, and the Biden administration. I guess they don't care as long as they vote. I mean, it seems to me, what do you think is underlying their just complete the lies that they tell about it and the complete lack of caring, no matter how bad things get?
Well, I think the executive order tells it in part that they don't mention the 10 to 15 million already in the country, no plan to remove them. If you saw it in Congress a couple of weeks ago, where the District of Columbia wanted to allow illegal immigrants to vote, Republicans shot it down. Every single Democrat supported it. They
Right.
wanted that they wanted the illegals to be able to vote. We know where this is going. Look at the U.S. Census. No longer says U.S. citizens, it says anybody in the country. It's going to be used for redistricting in Democrat districts. And you see pushes for work permits. You see pushes for driver's licenses. Department of Homeland Security is talking about issuing an official federal non-citizen ID. Look, this all takes us to the vote. They have put politics over national security to retain power for as long as they can.
No, that's what we had in Colorado, and I think this passed. And ironically, there was a Republican co-sponsor, but what they wanted to shorten the time it takes to get a driver's license from like 3 years to like 30 days if you're here legally or illegally. Yeah.
You can't say you're in school here or something. You got to go. I just arrived yesterday. I'm going to drive a car.
And the thing is in Colorado, we have the motor voter law, right? Yeah. So as soon as they do that, they're automatically registered to vote unless they say, oh, by the way, I'm illegal, so I can't vote. I mean, it's like you said, it's outrageous what they're doing.
Yeah. No, look, we cover all this in the book. We even show how previous administrations have handled this, whether Democrat or Republican. And that's why this administration really is unprecedented, the way they've just thrown their hands up and walked away from their federal responsibility of protecting the country. It's unbelievable. That's why the state of Texas... God.
I don't think they've thrown up their hands. I think they're
picked up with their arms.
Yeah, they're using their hands to help them. I mean, flying them in from different countries. I mean, it's not like they just gave up. They said, hey, we can't get enough, over the border, so let's start just flying them in. Let's go, the 200,000 or so got flown into the United States, into Miami and other places. I mean, it's such a criminal.
Well, Chuck, not only are they allowing to what is happening within the in between the ports of entry, they've exploited the legal pathways in. They've exploited asylum. They've exploited parole. They're violating all of the intentions of those laws. So they really have compromised the entire immigration system. What's left of it to facilitate people coming in. That's why this executive order does not limit the use of that CBP One app, the concierge service of illegal immigration.
Oh yeah, that's right.
Make an appointment to come in and enter the country illegally.
Yep.
what was amazing about this? It's very close to the deal that was brokered by Lankford. The Senate bill that was really going to help out.
You're right.
I mean, Trump turned down because he wanted to use immigration as an election issue. Yeah, right.
Yeah.
It's shocking, which also makes, if you're a Democrat, I mean, I don't know. It's hard to think of a Democrat as being a patriotic American.
Here's my question to sort of ties into that is, what about the role of the NGOs in all of this too,
NGOs.
Right? It's not like these people are just sort of sitting in their whatever terrorist village one day and say, I think I'm going to try to go to the United States. I mean, am I right in that they are being aided and abetted by non-government organizations with our tax dollars?
That are funded by the government. They're,
right.
they may, they're so, non-governmental
that's right.
funded by the government.
Well, the top three NGOs, Global Refuge, Southwest Key Programs, and Endeavors Incorporated, just three of them out of the many have received $2 billion.
Wow.
$2 billion.
Julie, we've got to start up one of those NGOs. Holy shit.
CEOs are now paying themselves $500,000, $1 million. There's going to be tons of waste, fraud, and abuse. And the difference, I'm glad you brought up the NGOs. The difference is now the NGOs are serving as an extension of government agencies like DHS, Health and Human Services. They are directly involved now in the trafficking of adults and children. Remember, we have 500,000 children. 85,000 are currently whereabouts unknown in the United States. They did away with DNA testing. They can no longer be certain who they're handing these kids over when somebody claims that they're a family member. The whole system has endangered these children like no time before. I mean, it's just the largest human trafficking operation. And we have a president that is working with the Mexican cartels to do it.
Let me ask you this. It's harder for me to understand. I understand the diehard Marxists, and what they want to do in a stream progressive, but how does approximately half the country think this is a good idea. I mean, how do they, is it just because they control the media, therefore they control what, you know, average, you know, non-doctrinaire, but they're, you know, a loyal Democratic voter. I mean, how do they get them to say, this is good, this will be good.
I'll vote for Joe Biden again.
Yeah, you know, I don't think they're good. So obviously I'm getting out and doing my book signings every weekend. And I got to tell you, I'm meeting a lot of people that are self-identifying to me. Hey, I'm a Democrat. Hey, I'm a Republican. And they're all saying, this isn't good. This is bad for the country. Now, the difference, Chuck, is will those that are saying, hey, I'm a Democrat, I know this is all screwed up, this is endangering my family, this is endangering the country, will they execute when it comes time to vote on this?
I don't know.
That's the wild card.
Right.
I don't know. I don't know. But everybody knows this is a big deal, because if they didn't, it wouldn't be the top election issue that it is right now.
Right. That's a good point.
The question is, hey, look, it's like the same people. How does somebody like Hochul keep getting elected? How does somebody like your mayor get elected?
Right. And he'll be governor someday. Yeah.
Right. Come on. Are you not seeing our city collapse? Are you not seeing the increase in crime and violence? And, you know, but they keep electing these people into office. And until they wake up and say enough is enough, that's it. Yeah.
Johnson made no bones about it. I mean, he didn't fool anybody. He didn't try to fool anybody. He said, I'm a extreme progressive and elect me.
And people's
you'd be good. You'd be good.
Just a couple more questions for you. We're talking with Charles Marino, author of a great new book, Terrorists on the Border and in Our Country. Let's say goodness prevails and Donald Trump wins in 2024. It seems to me that we still have millions of people in this country that we have no idea who they are or where they are or what, if anything, they're up to. How hard is it even doable to start to clean things up?
It is doable. It's not an easy job by any means. I've been there. But what I can tell you is you have to sequence. You got to start going after the national security threats. You got to go after those that are in the country illegally committing crimes. There are programs that you can stand up that both former presidents Obama and Trump used, by the way, called Secure Communities, where you deputize all 800,000 state and local law enforcement officers that if they arrest somebody in the country illegally, they're immediately handed over to ICE. Now, obviously, we know that sanctuary cities don't do that, which is why they need to be defunded, cut off until they start doing the same thing. And then you go after those that fail to show up for their immigration hearings and comply with their notices to appear. Also, look, student visas. You want to protest on a student on a school campus? You want to swear allegiance to Hamas? You're identified. You're out. You're deported. You're gone.
I read this incredible article the other day.
Immigration laws are very clear.
I read this incredible article the other day of what percentage of major elite universities are foreign students? 35 to 40% at Harvard and other places. And then you go, why? Well, one, you know, they pay full bore, and moreover, you know, their rich parents or their country will pour more money into it. It's a money maker for them to, you know, as opposed to a poor black kid from Newark or something, you know, they have to, you know, waive the entire tuition for.
You're right. I mean, look, there's plenty. You got visa overstays, people that, you know, are here for work visas, student visas, drop out of school, aren't working anymore, or they've just been here too long. You've got to deport them. So, Julie, my point is it achievable? Yes. Can we stand four more years under this administration? Absolutely not. But you got to lock down that border. You got to start enforcing the laws. You know, former President Trump has proven he can negotiate with a country like Mexico and say, look, you will be a part of the solution. You will stand up something called Remain in Mexico. You will make sure we're not overwhelmed. And you do that with all the other countries as well along the migration path. Diplomacy under this administration means one thing and one thing only: tossing billions of dollars up in the air to corrupt governments. That's not diplomacy. Diplomacy is carrots and sticks. And the United States has to go back under former President Trump and say, look, if you don't be a part of the solution, here's what's going to happen. Mexico is our number one trading partner. You don't think we have any leverage in that in that relationship? It's like, come on. You know, it's so easy to negotiate this and get it done. But this administration refuses to do it.
Well, Charles, where can people get your, and do you have any book signings in Colorado? Or where can people get your book?
So I'm not scheduled for Colorado yet. I'm working my way, just wrapping up South Carolina, hitting North Carolina in a couple of weeks. And then we'll be moving down to Texas and Arizona, California, and then we'll make our way back up in the north. So we'll be coming through Colorado for sure. They can find the book on Amazon. It's been a new release bestseller for the past 2 weeks.
Really?
Everybody is interested in this issue. It's important. I urge everybody to read this book before they go to the poll. And if they don't want to get it off Amazon, they can find it in any major bookstore.
All right. And the name of the book is Terrorists on the Border and in Our Country. Well, Charles, thank you.
Thanks so much. Great talking with you.
No, thank you. It's a great conversation. Appreciate it.
All right. Thank you. Appreciate that. Okay. So Charles Marino, I mean, it sounds like just a great book. I mean, it's one of those books where, I looked at it a little bit, he's done, well, of course he did his homework, but I mean, it's got facts, right? It does. I mean, it's very well done. It's Terrorists on the Border and in Our Country. We're coming up. We're going to be talking to Brent Kinman. He's kind of throughout the whole legislative session, he's one of the Colorado Republican House analysts. And one of the things he sent me, and he sent me stuff all through the session, he's just great. But he's talked about, if you thought that under the Polis administration, that you were paying more money to the government and getting less services, well, you are not wrong, but you're going to be shocked at just how bad it is. And Brent's going to come on and talk about that. But until he's going to join us on Zoom, so when I see him, or Thomas, if you see him, let me know. But I did want to talk briefly about this breaking news. Like I said, so it was just all over on Twitter, that Judge Merchan in the Trump New York trial, where he was just convicted, obviously, sent a letter to both attorneys, and the letter said that they found on the court, so this wasn't some random Facebook post, this is the court's Facebook page, that somebody had...
How would somebody get on the court's Facebook
page? Well, I imagine a lot of courts have, they have public things where you can say, oh, I love the court, I love judge this and that.
Oh, damn.
Yeah, apparently. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm not sure who the administrator is, but but somebody posted on there, my cousin is, and this was the day before the verdict, okay? My cousin's on the jury. They're going to convict Trump, and good job, everybody. Thanks for your hard work. Now, you're the lawyer. I'm pretty sure that every court hearing or court case I've been in, when the judge dismisses the jurors for the day and throughout the day, he repeatedly tells them, do not talk about this case to anyone. Don't talk about this case amongst yourselves, even outside of the deliberation room. I mean, is that not right? You're not supposed to be saying to your cousin, oh, we're going to convict Trump. It's going to be great.
Yeah, but let me point out another thing. When they leaked the draft of the Roe opinion, right?
Right.
And they go, this is awful. And then the chief judge said, we're get the marshals on this. And they, you know, and then they all said, huh, we couldn't find anybody.
No, but here, though,
and here, and they'll say, they'll say, okay, jurors, come in here. Now, did any of you tell your cousin that they, none of you did? Okay.
Well, can they? Well, but let me. Let's stay in the focus on the positive first. If they were to find somebody who told the cousin, right, that would be grounds for mistrial, right? Or yeah. I mean, that's clear jury misconduct, right?
Yes.
I mean, that's clear.
But you know, substantially, did it matter?
Well, no, though none of it mattered. But I mean, that might be another thing in appeal. And I guess I don't know. Clearly, I mean, it's been on the Facebook page for a while, so somebody must have noticed, right? And I'm curious that it took them kind of this long to do something about it. So maybe somebody
tried to squash it.
Now, let me ask you this. If I'm a juror, I mean, if I'm a juror and I just have all of them go in there and they take the fifth, right? I mean,
they're not going to take the fifth. They're all going to deny it. And I'll go, I didn't tell my cousin. No, I don't have a cousin. You know, come on.
Interesting. That's just another thing. Talk about corrupt, right? You just talk about.
But Judge Merchan will get down to the bottom of this.
He's not.
Justice will prevail.
He's not saying that. He just sent them a letter saying,
say, hey, this is a fun fact.
Yeah. All right. I think we've got Brent with us now. So Brent Kinman, as I said, he's with the Colorado House Republicans. And Brent, I'm calling you a legislative analyst. I'm not sure exactly what your title is. All I know is
Chief Nerd.
No, yeah, run the place. I don't know. All I know is you sent great analysis all session, and you have put together a great, you know, the budget and demography during the era of Jared. So thank you for your time today, and thank you
great
for the
to
hard
have you on
work
the show. Yeah.
Are you there? Can you hear us okay? What? Brent, are you on? Can you hear us okay? I'm not
can't
sure.
Hear a thing, but I assume you're there.
Oh, okay. Oh, you should be able to. So that may be okay. You know,
I've got
we may
all
have
my all my buttons unmuted and everything
unmuted.
I know to do, but can't hear a word.
Can you see in the chat section? Can you see the chat section there or no? I don't know why we can't hear.
How's this?
Well, can you hear us now or no? How about, well, shoot. Hey, Thomas. Okay. I'm trying to figure out how to do this.
This is the first one.
Yeah, this is the first one because he can't hear us.
Usually it's the other way around.
And tragically, Brent, I think we're going to have to, I don't know how to get hold of you. Apologize for the situation here. I think Thomas, until if he can't hear us, if he could maybe
call us.
Yeah. But if he can't hear us, he doesn't know. Let me see. Thomas, can you maybe type the call-in number and hopefully Brent will see it. Can
big
you?
Letters.
Yeah, and the big letters there. Can you do that, Thomas, for us? If I try to type, unlock my computer over. And then maybe he can call in and we could do it by phone.
Oh,
okay.
Boy.
Oh, I know. Thomas,
well,
can you?
We'll try this.
Can you hear us now?
Okay.
Now yep. You can?
Yay!
Because it would have been the blind leading the blind for me to try to tell you what to do. I can tell you that.
That's
good job figuring that out live on the air. Well, all right. I gave you an amazing introduction. We basically said you ran the legislature. No.
Okay.
I
mean, my head swelling.
That's right. Why don't you explain to folks what it is that you do with the legislature? And then I want to talk about the budget.
I work as an aide for Representative Scott Bottoms. Actually, I work not just with him, but with some of the more conservative members of the Republican caucus there. I do research and communications, things like that.
That's
and I have to say this, and I'm taking the day off. So I'm speaking to you on my own dime.
Well, given the budget, you should certainly be able to sneak it in somewhere in the Polis administration. Yeah. One of the things I noted, and basically you pointed out, that over the past 5 years, our population has grown 0.42% a year, but our spending has increased by 36.3% overall, or roughly 17 times faster than population growth. That's out of control growth in spending, and it's crazy. So talk to us a little bit about, I mean, theoretically, like you pointed out in this, we should be bringing in more money from these people. We should be seeing more services, but
better roads,
you know, better everything, but we're not, right?
No, the whole better roads thing is a pipe dream. People need to understand that when you think about the state budget, there on the one hand is what's called general fund monies. It's the money that comes into the state from income tax, sales tax, things like that. And that's the money that we control all by ourselves. Now, there's another category of funding that comes in. It's particularly from the federal government.
Okay.
And we don't, you know, we have some discretion on how we spend it, but that's not where, I mean, we're getting more federal money to be sure, but we're getting much more general fund money. In other words, it's not that the feds are sending us more money and we're spending it. It's that we're taxing more, we're spending more at this scale.
So people understand in a state, you can't do deficit spending. You have to match that sort of thing. So it's not quite the way it is with Congress, where the Innes guy
They
was
can
there.
just, well, so wait, so we're, talk about, so as you said, the spending has increased where, and as you said, you can't just print the money. So where they're getting more of this money, this
property tax
from us. Yeah, exactly. Basically, it's not, you don't just think you're giving Jared Polis more of our money. We really, really are.
Yes, you're giving Jared Polis a lot more money. In fact, you know, we've had Tabor for about 32 years, give or take. And for most of those years, there was no refund. State wasn't taking in that much. State wasn't spending that much. But for the last half dozen years, that is the time that Governor Polis has been in office, we've had refunds almost every one of those years because we've taken in so much more than we're legally allowed to take in. So we have to figure out ways to get it back to the public. And that's where the fun begins. Because you and I might think a refund, well, that's simple. I go to a store, I buy something, I get a call from the store owner later and he says, oh, you overpaid. Come back and get your refund. And you go, okay, fine. But if the progressives in this state are the store owners, then what happens is they call you and say, you spent too much, and you say, great, can I come in and get my refund? And they say, well, actually, we found some other people we think deserve it more. And so that's where the money's going to go, to the people that we decide to give it to. And they're doing it to the tune of billions of dollars.
Wow. Well, talk a little bit then. So some of the high points and the highlights and the things you think people need to understand about sort of the budget and the population growth and under the Jared years.
Oh my gosh.
Where do I start?
On the one hand, really any conscientious citizen has to think about the fact, I know this is slightly off topic, but that crime has gone up so much in Colorado. And it's come up because we have legislators who are apparently unwilling to put criminals behind bars for serious crimes. I mean, the crime rate has risen double digits, big time double digits. You know, I said population has increased 2% statewide over these past several years, but murders increased 45%.
Right.
Motor vehicle theft, 72%. Overall violent crime, 17.2%. So unless everybody who's coming to the state is a hardened criminal, you know, we're just not doing a good job. So there's that big problem. Then when it gets to the budget, you know, we're having these billion-dollar overages, and the Democrats have gotten very creative about how they're going to return that money, as they're required to do under law, how they're going to return that money to citizens. One of the ways they do it is by, for example, the last 2 years, they've simply said, we're going to send out the same amount of refund to everybody in the state, regardless of whether they've overpaid by $100,000 or whether they didn't pay anything in income taxes. We're going to send everybody the same amount. But they've had a revival this year, so they're rolling back 2 years of that practice. The other thing they do are what are called refundable tax credits. And there we are spending an absolute fortune. And what is strange to me, I understand why anybody would want to come to the United States. It's a great country.
Used to be.
What I don't understand is this apparent favoritism on the part of the majority down at the Capitol, where they want to send people who are in the country illegally, literally tens of thousands of dollars a year in refundable tax credits. In fact,
How does that work?
Because they're not working. They're staying in rec centers. Or I don't know, maybe they file an, you know, 10, whatever the thing is, for squeegeeing windshields or something like that. So
how does it work?
How are they
Here's
even getting
works.
Tax
Here's
refunds?
So at the end of this year, beginning, I guess, this time next year, you know, it's going to be income tax time.
Right.
So you fill out your income tax. Now, you don't have a Social Security number. That's okay.
Oh, good.
A taxpayer ID or something else will suffice for purposes of the state. And then as you begin to go down the tax form, you look at these refundable credits that you're eligible for. For example, this year we passed, I say we, you understand what I mean when I say
yeah.
that.
You have nothing to do with this.
The Family Affordability Credit. It is worth, so for example, a family with three young children, let's say 1, 3, and 5 years old, the state government will return $3,200 to you for each child. In
okay.
other words, nearly
$10,000.
Cool.
Okay? No. Okay.
So you get that. That's
Wait.
Just one of a handful of credits that you're eligible for that ends up totaling over $20,000 state of Colorado will pay to you.
Wait, no, but these are...
Well, these people file tax returns.
They file tax returns, but it's well, like, do they pay taxes? I mean, this is not... So this is not technically a refund because they overpaid or something like that. This is a credit. So, right? I mean, this is just... They just claimed this. They could write zero on the taxes paid or the income or anything. And simply by filing that, they're going to get roughly $20,000 paid to them by the state of Colorado?
Yes, there are several credits, but they are designated as refundable credits, which means money in the bank to you.
Now, so,
is it just fun to call them credits?
Yeah, I suppose they not have. Well, then
no, that's the mechanism, because what that essentially does is it then that money when you have, let's say, $1 billion of Tabor money that's supposed to be refunded to taxpayers, the credits lower
the amount
of refund that'll go out. So instead of, well, over 3 years, this particular tax credit is going to amount to about $1.7 billion taken off the table in terms of going to the
tax. And look at the people. So no, so these are people who don't have Social Security numbers. If they said,
but the file returns.
How do they verify? I know when we try to, you know, we have a son, right? And he has a Social Security number. How do they verify that these children even exist?
My recollection is that it is a matter of self-attestation.
I like that. I like that phrase, self-attestation.
That's a good
start
phrase.
Self-attestating, you know, yes. more children. Well, that's insane.
Well, that's insane.
Yeah. And again, as you point out, it's so what they're doing is they're bringing in more money. Because to me, the obvious thing would be to kind of look at it and say, well, God, you know, we're looking at the demographics here and we've been having to refund all this money. Why don't we just stop taxing as much and then everyone have to refund it and people can keep it themselves in the first place? I mean, is there anything wrong with that logic?
No. And in fact, that's the logic behind some of these ballot initiatives that you'll see come November from Colorado Advancing or Advancing Colorado.
Some of the property tax ones, right? No.
There's one that also deals with cutting the income tax.
So that's right.
State will collect less money in this.
Well, Jared Polis has always been for cutting the. He has. He has been for cutting the top rate. And
he's a clever guy. I mean, yeah. I met him. I used to meet with him every couple of weeks. He's no dummy.
Right. And now he says, we don't need to meet with you Republicans anymore. We just
You're annoyingly bright there.
My job changed, so I wasn't invited to the meeting.
You keep asking questions. Well, is there any way? So what happens then again? So the state is bringing in more money when it doesn't need to. And then rather than refund us, and all they say is, we don't have enough money for this. We don't have enough money for that. But what they're doing, you said, is in many of these cases, they're basically giving, like you said, it's like if I go to the store and I'm like, hey, look, you owe me my refund. And they're like, hey, we found these other people who never even bought anything from us, but we think they deserve the money more.
Or else you're one of the special ones here. You paid nothing, but here's a $20,000 to thank you for filing a return.
Well, the thing is, you know, where my heartburn comes from is, I'm sure you as well as I know people, they don't work one job to try to make it for their families. They work two. Some of them work three.
Yes.
And for various reasons, perhaps their base income is too high, they're not susceptible to getting these refunds.
Oh, no. And they don't know how to self-attest very well.
Yeah, yeah. Because I was going to say, we've never gotten any of these refunds.
But they're paying for them. This is the thing. I mean, you know the basic principle. All the money the government gets, particularly the state government, first has to take from the taxpayer.
Right.
It's our money. You know, you mentioned roads.
Our money.
A minute ago, for example. You know, we pay taxes, gas tax and things like that. And that provides a certain level of money for repairs and maintenance and this kind of thing. But for, I think it is 3 years straight now, the legislature has failed to allocate any money for building any new roads.
Excellent. $0.
So if the feds build a road in Colorado, it gets built. But otherwise, it's just maintenance. And because if you understand that there's one side in this debate that believes that in the best societies, everybody lives in the city. Nobody has a car. And we're all chums.
Yep.
And
we all live right on top of each other.
And we eat bugs, right?
You're right.
And you're, I mean, I think so. What you're getting at there is they're not spending money on roads. It's not because they don't have the money to spend. They are actively, intentionally not spending money on roads to make it harder for those of us who have to drive on the roads to get around.
Similarly, they've now mandated that the cities, I guess up in the Front Range, cannot have these parking requirements.
Right.
And so just to make it more miserable for everybody, because there's no place to park if you're a antisocial car driver.
But when you think about it, you know, we've talked a lot about the cost of housing, not in this conversation, but Colorado more broadly. Well, okay, there's an awful lot of regulations.
Yes.
Account for about 25 to 30% of the cost of a home. But
wow.
But there could be a different approach, which is to say, you know, if we actually built more roads and made it easier for people to drive in to urban centers, if that's where they need to do, then maybe just by virtue of supply and demand, the cost of housing could come down because we'd have a larger supply for people who don't mind living farther away. But again, that is anathema.
Right. Well,
could you, because you sound just great, give us a little bit about your education and background.
All off the turn.
He's making it all up. No.
Self attest to your.
No, I was, I had the greatest parents in the world. I was born in Dallas, Texas. I went to the University of Texas at Arlington, got a degree in political science. During my junior year there, I came to faith. I became a Christian, though I was not one at all beforehand. That represented a life change for me. I thought I would go into the law, but instead I took a different route and got involved in ministry. But then I thought, you know, I like the university setting, so I went to Cambridge University, got a PhD, and then taught in a university for several years. Eventually,
how'd you go from Texas Arlington, which is a fine school, but not necessarily the most elite, over to Cambridge for a PhD?
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Tell us.
Well, apparently they looked at my work and thought that I was able to do what they required. So,
and what college at Cambridge did you go to?
St. Edmunds College.
In Edmonds, okay.
We have run out of time, Brent, because
No, you're fascinated.
You're
Absolutely
you,
fascinated.
I mean, I read your stuff, you send it, and it's just great. And I think for all of our listeners, you need to start a podcast or something yourself where you can kind of outline this stuff, because there's no, that I'm aware of, there's nobody else doing it with the kind of detail that you provide. And yet it's easy to understand. I mean, even I can understand it, right? And I think, so I want to thank you for sending that all legislative session, but also for this work that you do here, because people need to know this, right? People need to understand, here's where your money is going, and the Democrats are not going to stop. So,
well, my chief role really is still education, help people understand, not in a mean and nasty way, but give people the facts. They can deal with it.
That's right. All right. Well, listen, Brent, we have to let you go. We'll have you back on.
Yeah,
thank you
will.
So
Thanks
much.
Thank
you.
Bye-bye, you guys. Sorry for the
podcast
glitch.
Podcast isn't your thing, but thank you so much. That's Brent Kinman, working with the state. Like
That's
I said,
good.
I'll have to start maybe putting in our newsletter or something, all of the stuff that he, because he does a great job with that. That was both thank you to him and Charles Marino. On Monday, we're going to have Gianna Maselli on. She's a podcaster and an influencer, and she's kind of be talking about one that people need to understand their constitutional rights. She said people don't really don't understand
what constitutional rights. Does the president know about his constitutional rights?
No,
does
but
Judge Marchand know about his constitutional
so
rights?
He's going to talk a little about exactly that, right? About how things are being twisted and turned around and how you can fight back against
yeah,
that.
That's the harder part.
That's the harder part. But anyway, so thank you to everybody on
Zoom.
Yeah,
great. Couple great guests. Thank you, everybody, and have a great, warm June
Happy
weekend.
Happy Party Friday.
Happy Party Friday.